Welcome in, latest episode of That SEC Podcast. I'm your host, Michael Bratton. I go by SEC Mike on a Twitter machine. And there's our good friend, Stephen Lassen, senior editor, Athlon Sports, back again to enrage the internet with some rankings. Stephen, how's it going, my friend?
Mike, I'm doing well. As if last week's quarterback rankings weren't enough to get the masses angry at us before we get to the 2025 season, and we still have a long offseason to go, why not do it a little bit more? I hope you enjoyed the Super Bowl, my friend. We are now in that long drought until we actually get some, you know, spring football or college football spring practice going to keep us busy here.
Yeah, so I'm seeing a lot of Ole Miss in the comments, so we better get what are we doing here today, Stephen? How are we going to outrage the folks? We're going to give head coaching rankings for the 2025 football season, and I've even asked Stephen to go a step further and kind of give a shout out to top five offensive coordinators, top five defensive coordinators. So we'll get to all that, but. Man, that Super Bowl was a little bit of a dud. Unless, of course, you hate the Kansas City Chiefs. That it was an amazing Super Bowl, wasn't it?
Yeah, there was like a lot of Chiefs fatigue that I saw leading up to the game. But if you were an SEC fan, good showing for SEC legend Jalen Hurts. You know, both of his schools now are in the SEC. Devonta Smith catching touchdowns. Georgia defenders showing out. So I guess in a way it was good for the SEC, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I heard Paul Feinbaum. I want to steal a line from him because he said it first. But the SEC may not have won the college football playoff, Stephen, but they won the Super Bowl based on Philadelphia and all their defensive players that were dominating this thing.
So Malachi Starks to the Philadelphia Eagles. just go ahead and draft him over there.
Hey, shout out Cousin Shane. He's in the comments. So I don't even know if Shane's still on vacation or not, but hopefully we'll see him sometime.
Oh, it's good to hear from the Tennessee homer. Hope he's having a great vacation. Have you heard it all from Cousin Shane the last couple of days? Or
yeah, he's down there. He's down at Disney going around the where they sell the alcohol. Of course, he found the one place in Disney you can buy alcohol, and apparently he bought that out. And his vacation, I'm sure he'll recap it much better than I, but he goes all out one day, has a lot of fun, steps. And then the next day, I don't think he moves. He's just at the pool and then he's back to activities. And then again, next day doesn't move. So, it's a roller coaster vacationing with Shane. I've done it personally. And he's as funny as he is on here, he's even funnier down there in Disney, 20 beers deep. You know what?
Oh man, I could imagine the fun we could have with Cousin Shane down in Orlando, walking around at some of those places. So yeah, that would be fun to be able to experience that. But man, he's had a couple weeks now to get rested, just over a week. So I can't wait to hear about all the vacation travels and to get his take on some of our SEC topics. I hope he's not too mad at me for my quarterback rankings either.
So he definitely is. But update. From the Tennessee homer. He'll be back tomorrow. He just got paroled out. Oh. So, they let him out early. We paid his bail.
Was he celebrating the Eagles Super Bowl up there? Those guys?
No, he's a big Swiftie. So, he was definitely on the Kansas City train. No, he's a Steeler fan like you. So, I think he was rooting for Kansas City. I don't think Steeler fans can get themselves to root for the Eagles.
Yeah, I guess that's a hard one for us Steeler fans. I'm more of like, please don't let Baltimore, Cleveland, or Cincinnati win a Super Bowl, I guess. I'm okay with the Eagles.
I don't think you got to worry about certainly Cleveland anytime soon. But right. All right, Stephen, let's get into it because we got a lot to get into here. And we could debate and debate and debate. And we're about to. SEC coach rankings. I say we save the best for the last. And kind of go in reverse order. How does that sound?
That sounds great to me, Mike. I actually had a pretty rigorous debate among some of the coaches at the bottom. So I'll be interested to see where you have these coaches. I would also be curious, did you have like a methodology to this at all?
Well, to be honest with you, Stephen, these were kind of difficult for me. I think number one is fairly obvious. I don't want to give that away. And then kind of like, I kind of put it in tiers because right now I think the SEC is in a unique spot. I think there are some really good coaches. I think there's some questionable coaches. There's some young coaches that have yet to, I see promise, but there's some with tenure, but again, I don't think they're necessarily that good. It's really a mix here. I've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. I've got 7 different tiers of SEC coaches, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that does. I kind of approached it from 2 different pools here. The first one is your totality body of work type.
Right.
What have you done throughout your career? What is your entire resume? And the second part of that is the subjective nature of this, like knowing everything you know. If you were sitting in an athletic director's chair, like who would you hire 1 through 16? So there is a level of subjectivity with this. I will tell you, I also just completely throw out like head-to-head battles between coaches because you're not just evaluating that game. You're evaluating like the whole body of work. So tough to judge recency, track record. Last year weighs pretty heavily in our minds, but where does that, how does that resonate with the entire resume for all these coaches? So be really interested to see your rankings.
Well, I'll tell you the one thing, Stephen. If JR was an SEC coach, he'd rank number one in my book. Shout out, Cousin JR. Just gifted a membership. I can read it off my phone here. I can't see it on the screen. To Cousin Byron Houston. Byron, welcome to the family. Thanks to the legend, Cousin JR. We appreciate you, buddy. All right, so number 16. Where are you going? I'll let you go first, and I'll tell you if you're right or wrong.
I've got Jeff Lebby of Mississippi State at 16. This was pretty easy, I thought. I'm willing to give him a bit of a grace period here because it was a year zero type situation. No doubts about his ability to coordinate a really, really high-powered offense. But the defense needs major work, and I actually need to see it. 2 wins, none in SEC play last year. So for me, this was a very easy spot for Jeff Lebby to slot into.
Right. And I mean, this was kind of a no-brainer of no-brainers. Like you said, 2-10 last year, 0-8 in the SEC. How many times, I call you the college football encyclopedia for a reason there, Stephen. How many times, to your knowledge, and I apologize for not asking you to have this in advance, but how many times do you think a team has gone 0-8 in maybe even like the last 20 years? I'm trying to think of many. Did Tennessee under Butch Jones, I think that last year, I think they may have went 0-8. That's one of the few. I mean, throw in a couple Vanderbilts, but again, that's Vanderbilt.
I was going to say Clark Lee, 2 out of his 3 4 seasons went 0-8.
Yeah, for sure. But again, I mean, we're not supposed to be named Vanderbilt. This Mississippi State, this is a proud program. So again, that's not all on Jeff Lebby, and I've made this point before, Stephen, but it needs to kind of be said every time, I think, if we're going to do our rankings like this. Just the situation and the massive coaching turnover has done him no favors. But at the same time, it was pretty awful last year. So, yeah, I think this was, again, this was kind of a slam dunk for me. Mississippi State, Jeff Lebby head coach, dead last in the rankings right now.
You are absolutely right about the situation that he inherited, and some continuity and some time, I think, will be good for Mississippi State. Like, you just think about the tragic passing of Mike Leach, the disaster that was Zach Arnett's one season, all the scheme changes, heavy roster overhaul. So that's kind of why I think last year was more of a year zero situation, but it also means that you've got to find a way to sort of supercharge this improvement to year one and in year 2, 3. So I'll be interested to see where this goes. Like I said, I trust his offense. I just think that the defense and roster program building is still a major question.
And then I've got the 2025 schedule up here, Stephen, for Mississippi State. If you're just listening back, I just want to go over the first four games right now at Mississippi State. No idea why we're going to Mississippi State. Why that's the opener? I mean, that's a dangerous game for old Jeff Levy. Arizona State, fresh off a college football playoff, a Big 12 championship, Alcorn at home, and NIU. All those last three are at home, but NIU, I don't know anything about their team other than they beat Notre Dame last year. I mean, this is for 9 out of 10 SEC teams. I mean, you're looking at this slate and saying, okay, 3-1 at worst. But I don't even know if we're there for Mississippi State. And the point being, this could go sideways in a hurry before we even get to a conference game. And I could be wrong, but I don't think they'll be favored in a single conference game. What are the odds? And I promise I'm not going to ask you this for every one, Stephen, but what are the odds that Jeff Levy gets fired just in his second year at Mississippi State?
I think they're pretty low. I think just kind of the scenario that we were kind of outlining with the sort of program upheaval that they've had and giving him a chance to rebuild the roster. But you are absolutely right about the schedule, though. I mean, I'm looking at those SEC games, and I could see 7 of those 8 teams being ranked in the top 25. I think Arizona State certainly will. Northern Illinois, I think they'll be one of the front runners in the MAC. And also, Southern Miss in the first game of the year, I think will be one of the most improved teams in the country next year. So that is a very, very difficult slate. So no breaks in year 2. But I think it's just, even if Mississippi State goes 0-8 in SEC play, I think it's almost about like progress. Like, are you more competitive? Is your defense better? Are you like getting some younger players in place to kind of show progress for 2026? So we've seen coaches get fired after 2 years, Joe Moorhead being one of them. It's not crazy to think it. I still think it's a long shot, though.
Yeah, and then last thing, and we can move. I'm trying not to turn this into Mississippi State podcast here, but migrating coconuts is Zach Arnett was better than Levy. That's a bold comment, too bold for me. What say you?
I think Levy will be better than Zach Arnett. That's
they better pray.
Yes.
All right. So who would you have at 15th, best coach in the SEC?
So I wrestled like crazy with this one because I had 3 coaches I could go with here. I settled on Clark Lea, and maybe I'm not giving him enough credit for last season, but I think when you compare him to the other coaches in this tier, you know, he still only has 5 wins in SEC play, 1 great season last year, full credit to him, hiring the right coaches, the work they did in the portal. The program is on the right track, but I still think he's got to be in this next 3 here somewhere. You give him credit for last year, but still 16-33, 5-27 in SEC play. To me, that's still the 15th best coach.
Yeah. In the comments section, Stephen, we're starting to get a little wild, which I love it. I'm seeing a vote for Mark Stoops. I'm seeing a vote for Freeze. Say what you want about it. I'm not defending any of those guys, but they certainly have proven themselves more than Clark Lea. So far we're 2 for 2 here, Stephen. This is exactly where I would say 15th. Give me Clark Lea. Everything you just said. I mean, you are far from a hot take guy, despite what the quarterback power rankings, what they said about you. But you were among the first to say it, and I heard many people say it thereafter, that going into the 2024 season, what, you know, Clark Lea better win, otherwise he could be gone. So but we're not that far removed from that. So yeah, I like the trajectory. I love obviously all the moves he made last offseason. I'm hoping that carries over the momentum to 2025, but until further notice, I think Clark Lea deserves no higher than 15th.
He, this is also the debate about like recency bias with these, because like I said, I think you have to give him credit. And I think you kind of have to assume that the program has like turned a corner, like the first right. couple years, now they're on the right track, but how much does that weigh into the total evaluation? Because they could, he went from hot seat to coach of the year candidate 2025. I think if we get another data point that says Vanderbilt goes 7-5, 8-4, I think he'll shoot up this list next year.
Yeah. All right. So who would you have number 14?
I got Sam Pittman. This is this tier is tough, Mike. I'll be curious to see who you have, because when I looked at Pittman's, record 14-28 in SEC play, he's 30-31 overall. So he's been about 500, but he doesn't have a winning season in SEC play. I love the 9-win season he had just a few years ago. I think they've done a good job of hiring assistant coaches with Travis Williams and, of course, Bobby Petrino. But still, 14-28. He was on the hot seat last year. 7-6 was a job saver. I just need to see a little more to have him higher.
Well, four bowl games, Steven. Well, I know one was COVID, but I don't think they played in that one. But four bowl games in 5 years. And this is after the disastrous Chad Morris era, the guy that shall not be named here. I say all that to say that's exactly where I added to, Steve. So, right, for me, this is the cutoff of the tier. And I got Jeff Levy, Clark Lee, Sam Pittman, same as you. And my point being, and maybe I'm wrong here, but I don't want to say these guys are interchangeable, but I think if you put Clark Lee at Arkansas, you put Sam Pittman at Vanderbilt, I don't know if they do, remarkably different, if that makes sense. And I'm throwing Jeff Levy in there. I know Jeff Levy's not had a ton of time to actually prove that, but I guess I'm basically grouping these three together. Do you think that's fair?
I think that's fair. I would also include the coach that I have ranked 13th in this conversation, for a variety of reasons, but I think maybe you could separate Pittman and Lee a little bit over Levy at this point, just because he has that 0-8 season, and Pittman,
yeah,
the bowl games you mentioned, plus Clark Lee's 2024 season. So I think 14-15 is a step ahead of 16, and then I also have my 13th ranked coach in this tier as well.
Ooh, I bet I know who it is. Who's your number 13?
I got Brent Venables.
Oh, okay. So this is where we'll deviate for the first time. Not a Sooner guy, huh? At least Venables.
I hate to repeat myself, but this was tough. I mean, I look at Brent Venables and see 6-7 in his first season. There were some close losses. They had some injuries that year. They turned it around 10-3 in 2023. And then last season, kind of a weird year, 6-7. Ton of injuries, just 2 wins in SEC play, oddly enough, over both teams in the state of Alabama. So there was some good, and I like what he's done on the defensive side of the ball. But I think now the question is, what can he actually get Oklahoma back to that 10-win mark in SEC play? And that's what I want to see this season. This is the spot where I wrestled with putting coaches who are more established, but maybe I would hire Venables over them if we were just doing purely subjective. But I gave some coaches credit for resume and longevity at this point.
Right. Oh, okay. Interesting. So, well, I was about to say, not impressed with the Armed Forces Bowl, huh? But I guess, he lost that. But I get you. Venables is a tough one. Clearly one of the best defensive minds in the game. But that's not what we're evaluating right here. So I don't completely bicker with this, but I have a different number 13, Steven. I'm going our man. Start calling him the milkman. Mark Stoops, come on, Dad. Again, he's an average coach. He's lifted Kentucky to another level. But I think clearly he is he's kind of hit that ceiling, and I don't know that it's, I mean, it's regressing pretty quickly here, and I would imagine that's kind of where we're going to live at here. Any thoughts on Mark Stoops at 13? So really, you think Brent Venables, you're kind of giving Stoops probably more credit for tenured and stability in the SEC?
That's exactly it. I did consider Stoops this low, and it's kind of a shocking fall because last year I think he was in my top 10, top 8 or so, but just the trajectory. I think, is kind of why I was considering Stoops this low. And it also kind of gets at, you know, the subjective nature of this. I think Venables is one of the top defensive minds in college football. And if I'm just hiring a coach based upon everything I know about them, maybe you would bank on Venables and the upside and say, I can surround him with some offensive coordinator personnel and the finances to go out and get the people he needs to build a good offense. Whereas Stoops, I think you have to give him a nod for the resume and the track record, but also how much do you weigh into the decline last season? Seven wins each of the last 2 years before this, and then the one play away from a winless season in SEC play. So I have a ton of concerns here for Mark Stoops. He's not too far higher on the list for me.
Yeah, and again, if you're apologies if you're just listening and you can't see the graph I got here, but that 2020 season, they only won 5 games, but of course that was the COVID year. You know, in a normal year, that's probably a 7-8 win, maybe even 9 for Kentucky because of their dreaded non-conference. But point being, that outlier, the outlier, if not for the COVID year, would be the 4-8. And it's hard to see where we're headed. And again, I'm not saying Mark Stoops is awful or anything like that. I just think that whether it's him, whether it's Kentucky, I don't think they're suited or positioned well, particularly in this NIL transfer portal world. And quite frankly, yeah, you know, that's, you know, people read into that, Steve, and say, well, it's Kentucky, they're poor or whatever. That's not accurate at all, because they spent pretty big last offseason to keep talent, to get a quarterback, to get a linebacker from Georgia, to get a running back from Ohio State. They were spending. But I think I always thought the strength of Kentucky was identifying talent and developing it. And sadly, particularly if you're a Kentucky fan, that model is just, it's not sustainable at high level college football right now, is it?
No, that's exactly right. Kentucky, and this is what concerns me, is getting the most out of the roster has been a strength for Stoops, and also just the defense. I mean, they were 12th in the SEC in SEC-only games in scoring defense last year. So not only do they need to do a good job of developing and recruiting, they also have to do a good job of retaining talent. And I think what alarms me the most is sort of that erosion to 1-7 in the SEC play with on paper, a defense that should have been pretty good. And you also look at some of the weapons they had. That was kind of a step back from where they had been as far as getting the most out of the roster and maximizing all those pieces that they had. And in theory, a team like Kentucky with all the veterans, the seniors that have been through that program, like last year would have been a good year for that defense to sort of maximize the pieces and be one of the better defenses in the SEC.
Yeah, and I know they had injuries. Everybody's got injuries, but I don't know how much of a true excuse that is. But you're starting to see NFL buzz, Senior Bowl, and things of that nature. They're loving a lot of these Wildcats that are in the pre-draft process. So again, that's not necessarily a good look either for Kentucky that they had these guys and they were so porous on the defensive side of the football. I got Stoops at his own tier. That's kind of cheating, but again, I'm not saying he's awful. The fact that he's sustained and been this, you know, I've given him bonus points, I guess you could say. Where do you have Stoops? I didn't even get your thoughts on where you ranked him.
I have him 2 spots higher. Okay. I have him at 11. And my first note that I wrote down was, I'm ranking him this high because of track record. And perhaps being doubted, he proves everybody wrong this year and gets Kentucky back into a bowl game and they exceed expectations. And, you know, just some of the other things that stood out to me was, I mean, the double-digit win seasons, he's had 2 of them. Kentucky has 4 in his program history. So I'm giving him some credit for the longevity. But like I mentioned, I am very concerned about the sort of trajectory here for Kentucky and maybe a kind of program getting stale feeling.
Yeah. Hey, shout out to our buddy Liquid. Great to see him in the comments. Great to see he's doing well. But he's got a message. Check out, like the video and check out the Discord. if you haven't seen, we're gonna have to get I know you're busy, Stephen, but we gotta get you on that Discord. We got all the cousins in there firing questions. It's a good time over there. So check that out if you haven't already. So I apologize, Stephen. I skipped one for you. Who do you have at number 11 then?
Mike, it's your favorite coach. I got Hugh Freeze at 12 here. You know, I had Stoops and Freeze kind of in the same tier.
Yeah,
to be a broken record, I gave Stoops some credit for longevity. Obviously, things to like about Hugh Freeze. I think he's pretty good at calling plays. I think he can build a successful offense. But they're just 5-11 since returning to the SEC. Certainly great recruiting, but also, you know, there's no more can throw this coach, this player under the bus. This is pretty much his roster and coaching staff now. So I had him at 12 and Mark Stoops at 11.
Oh, believe me, Stephen, if Hugh Freeze finds a way, he's going to throw someone under the bus. He's throw you or I under the bus. Right. You know, if they don't get it done next year, but yeah, big year, year three, excuses are running thin. You know, it's so funny because in the off season, it was, you know, Peyton's our guy. Peyton's the man. We ain't spending $1 million. And then of course, well, we were just awful because of Peyton. You know what I mean? Like you can have it both ways. If you Hugh Freeze, 8 out of 10, they would have went undefeated. I mean, I'm surprised you didn't know that, right, Steven. 8 out of 10. He's got a perfect record. If only his players did what they told him to do. But yeah, I'm right there with you. I don't want to reveal my other two just yet, but I've got Hugh Freeze number 11, Venables 12. So I have them in the same tier because I'm a little concerned that, you know, overall record, Hugh Freeze looks pretty good, but that includes an Arkansas State year. That includes a bunch of Liberty years where, again, his team won 10 games year two and then eight each of the next year, including they absolutely quit on him at the end there, which maybe that was a red flag that people should have picked up on. But I think he's living in the past, living off past glory that he beat Nick Saban. I mean, that's the first thing on his coaching resume. He beat Nick Saban twice, which that's fantastic. Very few have done that, but I don't know. I don't think he's a very good coach. I think he's a good liar. Obviously, he's a great liar, and he's a good recruiter. And I think he uses those skills to do that. But if he doesn't get it done next year, and this is a manageable schedule, but there's a lot of tricky road games. And if there's one thing I know about old Hugh, he'll blow a road game or two. So, I think this is a completely fair rankings. And it's funny that Stephen and I have him about the same place. Steven loves the guy compared to how I feel about him. You know what I mean? So we're kind of on the mark of where this guy should be right now.
How big is that Auburn and Oklahoma game going to be on September 20th for like the narrative for both programs? Just think early in the season with all the questions, Jackson Arnold playing Oklahoma, John Mateer playing Auburn. Like it's going to be a huge narrative setting game for both teams, right?
Oh, no doubt. And let me ask you this. I know it's way early. Things are bound to change. Let's go over the two teams' schedule real quick, just leading up to that. Oklahoma's got Illinois State at home, Michigan at home, which could be another big one, and at Temple before hosting Auburn. Meanwhile, Auburn's got at Baylor. Could be a tricky game. Ball State at home and South Alabama at home. Which one is more likely, Stephen, Auburn or Oklahoma, more likely to be undefeated come heading into that September 20th game?
I think I would go Auburn. I think that Oklahoma-Michigan game, very winnable for Oklahoma. I think Michigan's just better than Baylor, so I would probably give Auburn the nod in that scenario.
Okay, well, you know what you just did, Stephen? You just cursed Auburn. They're probably going to be 1-2 going into that game.
if they lose to Baylor, can you imagine just how this could really start to spiral and then lose to Oklahoma and be sitting there with two losses before the month of October and what's kind of a critical year for Hugh Freeze? That'd be a pretty bad start, wouldn't it?
Yeah, no doubt. And I mean, That's all we did last season. I mean, let's just throw this up real quick. I mean, I know it doesn't really matter, but if we look at Auburn's 2014, everybody, unless you hate Auburn, you know, everybody said, oh man, they're going to cruise to 4-0, and then that Oklahoma game is going to be huge. Well, heck, they were 2-2 by the time that rolled around, and then they ended up dropping that Oklahoma game. So, I mean, it's just wild that all these theories and the storylines we come up with, and then it's even more chaotic than you could ever imagine with old Hugh Freeze.
Especially those games where they were favored, like California. They were a favorite in that game, and I'm pretty sure they were favored against Oklahoma and Vanderbilt. I think they were slight. I hope I'm getting that right. So losing as favorites when you had a favorable schedule is not ideal. And especially to a kind of Cal team that was hovering around 500 in the ACC.
It was things like that, Stephen. Yeah. We should have known the SEC wasn't going to win the national championship. I remember when Cal was blasting that they beat Auburn and that the ACC owns the SEC. I knew we were in trouble. You know what?
I guess what's 2025 could be the revenge tour for the SEC, like when that's what Nick Saban was.
All right, so we're about to get into your top 10. Real quick, though, Stephen, got to remind the cousins, this week we're brought to you by Rocket Money. Head on over to rocketmoney.com, or even better, just download the app Rocket Money on your smartphone and put in that promo code GAME ON, all one word, GAME ON, over at Rocket Money. Personal finance app to help you cancel unwanted subscriptions, help you improve your credit score, save money in 2025, Stephen, with the Rocket Money app, rocketmoney.com, promo code GAME ON over at Rocket Money. Cannot recommend it enough. And if your coach is at the bottom of this list, you need to start saving up for that buyout. You know what I mean? That's kind of where my head's at. And the best way to do that, get your personal finances in order, thanks to Rocket Money, and we'll be buying Hugh Freeze out of here in no time. You know what?
I was just counting about four coaches there. The programs need to be saving everything in their budget for potential buyouts this offseason. So that's a great way to sort of get our friends over at Rocket Money a couple extra subscriptions from good folks at those athletic departments.
Yeah, no doubt. All right, Steven. So who is your number 10 SEC coach?
I've got these next two coaches in a tier. I've got Billy Napier at 10. And sort of my thinking is, if Florida picks up where they left off last season, I suspect he's going to move up this list quite a bit by next year. But he also kind of fits the pattern of some of these other coaches where he was on the hot seat. And then that stretch at the end of the season, the four wins to close the year, great wins over LSU and Ole Miss. How much of that should weigh into his ranking? How much of it is overall? He's been very successful at Louisiana. I think he's done a good job of building up the roster, some of the off the field stuff. But he was also on the hot seat. He was almost fired a couple times this year. So I've got him at 10, but also don't think there's much separating Napier from the next coach on this list that I have.
Yeah, interesting. So I also have Napier at 10, and I'm putting him in the same tier as Venables and Freeze. You know, some of the same things you could say. Had some success, had some failures. I think there's certainly a doubt. I mean, I certainly don't think all the three of those guys will get fired, but I think any of the three could. And that is with the strides made, with the future secured with DJ Lagway. But again, if things go sideways on us here in a hurry, Stephen, LSU, at Miami, Texas comes to town, at A&M whooped you last year. You're having to go to them now. I mean, there's just one landmine after another, and winning 8 games, that's fantastic. That's not even the standard at Florida, but there was a hell of a step forward, particularly after staring down the barrel of not making a bowl game until they caught fire. But all that does, Stephen, is that ratchets up the expectations, as it should. Again, this is Florida. This ain't, you know, Ball State or Baylor or some BS university. This is Florida, man, where 10 wins, it should be like bare minimum standard. Yet with this slate, that's going to be difficult. But we said the same thing last year, and they exceeded expectations. So Napier, like you said, he's got an opportunity to skyrocket up these rankings. But we also can't necessarily just hand that to him, given that his SEC record's 10-14. And it's not like he inherited a dumpster fire or anything. You know what?
Yeah, that schedule for next season, it almost feels like 2-4 isn't out of the question. I don't think they will finish 2-4 in the first six games, but it's also not off the table because LSU, Miami, and Texas could all be top 10 teams when they play next year. So it is a very difficult schedule. And that also kind of gets at coming into 2024, it was the best roster. It was the best situation Napier had. I bought into it. They looked awful early, and then they had the rebound late. So our preseason prediction they would get to a bowl game was right. The path was a lot more winding than I anticipated. So I think the question for me is now, it feels like the program is in better shape, but we also said that before, and I also would like to see more than four games of that play that we saw. I want to see that carry into 2025. And if he does, I think he'll move up this list quite a bit.
Yeah. All right. So who you got number nine, Steven?
I got Mike Elko. And credit to him right off the bat for the job that he did at Duke. 16-9, a 9-win season. They were in really bad shape when he took over the program. So his impact on Duke was noticeable right away. And I think you're seeing that at Texas A&M. I know the ending wasn't great, but they were in the mix to make the SEC championship right up until the final week of the season. I think he's the right fit there. I think he's got to find a way to do what the other coaches haven't, which is maximize everything that A&M has going for it. I think A&M is on the right track, but 8-5 in his first year, I got to go with 9th in the SEC.
Yeah, we could, what if literally every coach on this in the conference, Stephen, but that is wild to think about. Like you said, had they beaten Texas and made the SEC championship in Mike Elko's first season in College Station, and not that it was like, well, it was a play here or a play there and they could have done it, but because Texas dominated that game, but let's say just in this fantasy land, let's say A&M had won that game and made the SEC championship, regardless of the result in Atlanta. How high do you think Elko would be on this list?
I think maybe a spot or two. I think you could maybe rank him as high as 7. That's probably about as high as I would go.
I might put him in a top 5 if he managed to do that, particularly if he led him to the college football playoff. You know, because I think that would have been something, but I'm a little, and you can't put it all on him, but I got him number 9 as well. So it's Steven and I did not share our list heading into this, but it's funny how on point we are. But the point being is, you know, a game here, a game there can really dictate perception at this point of the offseason, if that makes it. Like, I guess the point being is next year will be really give us a lot better indication of where Mike Elko is among SEC head coaches.
Absolutely. And I think you have to sort of trust his roster building, especially with some of the transfers they brought in last year. Nick Scorton showed out. I think he also inherited a roster with some turnover from the previous year, even though very talented recruiting classes, finding guys that fits what he needs on offense and defense. I think they're on the right track. The other question I guess I would ask you about Elko would be, what grade would you give him for his first year at 2024 Texas A&M?
Well, I was leaning towards AA+. Then the final month happened. So maybe B.
I was kind of thinking B+. I would have liked to have seen them finish better, but at the same time, if you're in the hunt to play for the SEC championship until November, late November, and yours feels like the program is on the right track, I'd be willing to bump up to like a B plus.
Now that I think about it, Steven, I'm bumping him down to B minus. Because he lost to Texas in that game they've been waiting for over a decade to play. And then the bowl was even worse. So yeah, I'm downgrading it to B minus.
Can't losing to Lincoln Riley if you're an SEC coach is worth like a minus in the category, yeah, right?
Exactly. So and again, that was my tier right there. Elko, Napier, Freeze, and Venables. I essentially have them all in the same tier. All of them could jump up the rankings. And I think those first three or for Venables, Freeze, Napier, I think they could all potentially get fired if things go wrong. I don't necessarily think any of them will, but I'm saying their future is not totally secure, if that makes sense.
Is Elko and Napier and maybe Venables the three coaches with the most potential to move up this list next year?
At least up to this point, perhaps, unless Jeff Lebby does a miracle, or maybe if Vanderbilt takes another step forward. I think Clark Lee is one that could jump up this list as well.
That's fair. Yeah, I think Clark Lee with another winning season, I think would certainly prove that Vanderbilt's on the right track, and he probably would jump. I think he probably would jump into this tier. Like if Vanderbilt goes 8-4, I think he's a lot closer to the middle of the pack in the conference rankings than being 15th.
Right. All right. So Stephen, who you got number 8 in your SEC head coach rankings?
I've got Shane Beamer, and this is close. He and the next coach on this list are neck and neck. I think let's give Shane Beamer some credit for maximizing the resources there at South Carolina, you know, getting them to the doorstep of the college football playoff. And much like Mike Elko, it very much feels like they are on the right track going into 2025. I haven't necessarily loved his offensive coordinator hires, but for the most part, they've been okay. Getting to bowl games 3 out of the 4 years, 5-3 record last season in SEC play. That was just the second time since 2014 that South Carolina has had a winning record in SEC play. So wow. I like the trajectory. If they can make the playoff next season, I think he will probably vault up this list by a couple spots.
Yeah, and this is exactly where I've got Beamer too. So again, great minds think alike. This is a new tier for me though. I've got Shane Beamer and one other coach. I'm fascinated to see if it's the same coach that you have in their own separate tier at this point in time. But I certainly think Beamer is proving a lot of his doubters wrong. You got to remember the situation he stepped into to where, I mean, a lot of people wanted Hugh Freeze hired down here. A lot of people, I always question. I've said it many times, Stephen, and I hold to it, even though Shane Beamer's potentially proving me wrong here. I would never hire an SEC coach, head coach, that has never been a head coach. I think that's a huge mistake, simply because it's difficult to learn on the job. This is not the conference to do that. Yet he's proven to be an outlier in that regard. I think he's a hell of a coach, and he earned his contract extension he got a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, absolutely. I was going to ask you about Shane Beamer. I thought that I had while putting together this list, and I wanted to see if you thought I was completely crazy. Has it felt like South Carolina under Beamer has overachieved more often than not in terms of like preseason to like preseason, me or your opinion, or like Vegas odds?
Oh, certainly, because the first 2 years made a bowl game. In both the over-unders, I believe, were under 6 the first 2 years. So he exceeded. The thing that was rough was 2023, obviously, took a big step back. Offensive line was a nightmare, and they had a senior quarterback that was coming off a sensational 2022. So, you know, there was high hopes, major disappointment, but then they bounced right back. And again, there he was one that entered the season, some thought, most notably Cousin Shane on the hottest of hot seats. And, you know, he was, I think he won at least one SEC Coach of the Year award. So yeah, I think that's fair. It's he's one where maybe you don't want the expectations because it seems like when they have them, they underachieve. When they're being disrespected, they overachieve.
Oh, that's a great point, because it felt like in 2023, they entered the season with expectations of being in the top 25. And of course they had all those injuries and the offensive line turnover and finished just out, you know, finished 5-7 that year, just outside a bowl game. But if they can win 8 to 9 games again this year, I mean, he's someone else who can move up. But also, I think just for, maybe like perception purposes, I just feel like at South Carolina, you need somebody who can get the most out of the roster, but also be able to mine the portal. You're not going to be able to out-recruit the Alabama, the Georgias, the Texas. And now that there's a track record there, like with Kyle Kennard and some of these other transfers they've really hit on, now to pair them with a Lenora Sellers that is going to be a difference maker at quarterback, it feels like if they can run that formula back this year, they can get over the hump and get in the playoff and potentially cause some havoc, especially when you have someone like Sellers on your offense.
Right. All right. So who do you got number 7 in your coach rankings?
I got Eli Drinkwitz. First 3 seasons, wondered where this was going. Yes. Last 2 years, really feel like those first 3 years have paid off, like in the roster building. 21 victories in this stretch. That is the best 2-year stretch for Missouri since 2013 to 14. I think he's done a great job in recruiting through the portal. Maybe they didn't capitalize on a great schedule and the roster this year, but still, 21 victories over the last 2 years. I think it's hard to argue. I've got him at 7.
And the reason I'm laughing, or I was laughing, because that's right where I have him, and that's my tier here, Drink and Beamer. I think they're pretty similar. I put out this in another interview. I put it out this morning. You know, who's doing a better job, Drink or Beamer? And it's so funny, Steven, because you know, half the comments are like Drink, and then the other half are Beamer, and then if it's not one of those, it's like, this isn't even a question. Yet all the responses are seemingly split. So, yeah, I mean, I think this is one of the great coaching questions in the conference right now, going back and forth. I think they're both obviously doing a hell of a job, both overachieving. Beamer just got his first win over Drink. But, again, to your point, Missouri doesn't play Clemson every year. You know, they seemingly always have the easiest schedule in the conference. So, I do think Drake's doing a slightly better job, but I don't think it's that wide of a gap between the two. I really don't.
I had these two coaches like in the same tier, and I guess hearing about the comments makes me feel better, because it does feel like a very much like 51-49 debate here. And I think that looking ahead to 2025 and sort of thinking what could shape Drinkwitz's valuation is, you know, like stay in power. Like if they go out and win 10 games again, I think he maybe inches up a little bit closer. And certainly in the national rankings, these guys are top 25 coaches, but you start changing the perception a little bit and he moves up the list. So the last 2 years have been great. If he can do it for a third year, even more respect. And especially if they continue to mine the portal successfully with Prabula and some of those defensive transfers they have coming in this year.
All right, so who do you got number 6? And here's the start of a new tier for me.
I've got Josh Heupel at 6.
Steven, you're fired. Get the hell out of here.
Sorry to Cousin Shade here. I let me pose this question for you, Mike. Is it possible that Heupel is maybe underappreciated given the situation that he stepped into?
Yeah, he certainly is by Steven Lassett, apparently, who's got a – number 6, I think you're way off. He's not even in this tier to me, but I think he's done a heck of a job. I think Heupel, I got Heupel in the top 4. I mean, I think he's done that good of a job, and hell, for all the hype with Missouri and Ole Miss and, you know, playoff or bust, it was Tennessee making the college football playoff. So, yeah, I think he's exceeded every single expectation of anyone that had him prior to getting to Tennessee.
He's underappreciated nationally and definitely underappreciated or underranked in Stephen's rankings, apparently. I look at this resume, Mike, and I see a team that won 11 games, went to number one in the college football playoff standings. They went 10-3, and they've reached the college football playoff. And they have two winning seasons in SEC play under Heupel. The last coach to do that at Tennessee was Philip Fulmer. So it has been a while since a coach compiled two winning seasons in SEC play. And I love the adaptability that he has showed at Tennessee, being able to lean on the defense and run game, high-powered quarterbacks and passing game in some years. So I got him sixth. I think he's probably certainly a top 15 coach nationally going into 2025.
And like I said, we could, what if, for all these guys, Stephen, but if they were, I've got the schedule up for next year, non-conference, Syracuse in Atlanta is the opener. That's the only really tricky one. Georgia at home, at Alabama, at Florida. Certainly those will not be easy. At Mississippi State, Arkansas at home, Kentucky on the road, Oklahoma at home, and Vanderbilt at home. If, big if here, because I'm not projecting it. I don't think it's impossible by any means, but if Tennessee makes the playoff second straight year, how high would you put Heupel on this list?
I think potentially he could be the third best coach in the conference. Mm-hmm. I think that's also assuming the two guys that I think are probably going to be one and two in our rankings do what they expect to. It does feel like this cluster of coaches, three through six maybe, are somewhat close nationally and certainly within this conference. Would you agree with that?
I love this comment. Shout out, man, I just missed it. It was from Coconut. He said, Brian Kelly in the top five. That man starts 0-1 every year. Yeah, I mean, what a comment. But, all right, so my number six is completely different than yours, Stephen. I'm going Mr. Kalen DeBoer, who last I checked, Stephen, lost to Josh Heupel in their only matchup. Yes, he's beaten overrated Dan Lanning. He's beating Sarkisian. I get all that. But I don't know. I'm still on wait and see mode for old Kalen. This better be a big year for Alabama. If not, I mean, every time he did something good, he did something bad last year at Alabama. So I don't know that if he's quite cut out for the SEC. You know, there's many guys that come into this conference. They're all world. They're all awesome. My man, look what he did at Washington. How special was that? They had two, three games they had to get up for out there. You know what I mean? But this is the SEC, Stephen, where you can't get away with those shenanigans. So I had Kalen DeBoer at number six. Get the heck out of here with old Josh Heupel at six.
I've got Kalen DeBoer a few spots higher. Probably a lot of that is his success at different levels and winning consistently at several different jobs. The one thing that made me hesitate, though, is what you mentioned, is the inconsistency. And at Alabama, the shoes to fill from Nick Saban are massive. 9-4, it's not bad, but it's also not the standard either. And there were definitely the no-show against Oklahoma, the performance against Vanderbilt, and the no-show against Michigan in the bowl game. Those are very alarming signs for coach that is supposed to be very good at maximizing everything about a roster.
Yeah. So I apologize. Where did you have Kalen DeBoer? What number?
I have him fourth. God. Kind of bracing for the blowback here.
So who would be your number five then? I think we skipped that one.
I've got Lane Kiffin at five.
Oh my goodness. Your list just keeps getting worse, Stephen.
I think three through six are pretty close in this discussion. Mm-hmm. I think with Kiffin, I love the ability to mold a roster in this era. His work in the transfer portal and elevating Ole Miss into SEC title contention in the mix to be a playoff team. He's got the best win total in school history and also three double-digit win seasons. Maybe a missed opportunity. I would like for him maybe to not be so stubborn about certain things in the play calling aspect, but 11-5 in the last 2 years in SEC play at Ole Miss. I've got Lane Kiffin as the fifth best coach.
Wow. Well, I don't even want to reveal. I'll tell you where I got him later because you're so far off the mark. Give me old Mr. 0-1 every year. Shout out Coconut. I got Brian Kelly number five. And this is a play for stability, longevity, whatever you want to call it. And maybe I should perhaps flip-flop him and DeBoer because they've only met, to my knowledge, once, and that was last year. And what a whipping that was in Baton Rouge, 42-13. But I'm giving Brian Kelly the benefit of the doubt. I get all his haters. Some of his stuff I'm not a big fan of either. But I certainly think he is a good coach. Probably a very good coach. I mean, just look how many wins he's got. But I do not think he's elite. I think he's a notch below elite. So that's why I got Brian Kelly number five. I think that really says something about the SEC, about how we may not have elite coaching right now if this guy's top five in the conference.
That is something that stood out to me in doing these rankings, is it feels like a very wide open coaching situation in the SEC. It does not feel like this is a very strong group of coaches in the SEC. Is that fair?
Yeah, I think that's very fair.
I think with Kelly, I think you do have to give him a lot of credit for the longevity aspect of this and also winning at different levels, whether that's Grand Valley State, Central Michigan, Cincy, Notre Dame, and LSU. The other side of me says, if Les Miles and Ed Orgeron are winning national championships, you got to find a way, because I think Brian Kelly is a much better coach than both of them. So, 17-7 in the SEC, not bad. But at the same time, I think the standard is much higher, and that's certainly going to the playoff next season.
Hey, here's one thing that I never get. The Uno Mas, I think that means the one more, DA one more, whatever. What happened to Lane Kiffin at Southern Cal? He won 10 games and 7 the next year, then got fired the next. All right, maybe I misread it, but what happened was Lane Kiffin was a wild man, and he has matured, and I don't hold that against. If anything, Steven, I think when you leave your quote-unquote dream job, or have it, as he called it, and he left Tennessee in the middle of the night like a loser, like a pirate leaving the ship, you know, after burning it down. But yes, I rooted openly against Lane Kiffin back in. But what happened was, I don't think he was ready for that type of a job. But I think it's all the more impressive, Steven, that you could be at Ole Miss, and I'm not trying to be disrespectful to Ole Miss, but Ole Miss is a much more difficult job than Southern Cal, in a tougher conference with a lot of things potentially holding it back, and yet he's doing significantly better than Southern Cal is. I think that is I think that speaks to what how far he has come as a coach, and why I think he's borderline elite, even though they kind of, in my opinion, I think they really screwed the pooch this year, not getting to the playoff.
I think it's a sign of, like you said, his coaching development. And I will say, in fairness to him, I think there was a lot of things that he could have improved on at USC, but he was also fighting the sanctions too. They were very short on scholarships that one year. They right. were hit hard by sanctions from the Reggie Bush thing that happened under Pete Carroll. So there were some things out of his control when you're that short on like offensive linemen and some of those things. But there was also like some of the sideshow stuff that was going on. You know, I mean, I think he's grown and matured a lot from that, and his ability to adapt like to different eras. I mean, being able to go out and use the portal and elevate Ole Miss into, you know, potentially an annual contender for the playoff, I think speaks volumes about where he's come as a coach.
All right, we're into the top four. And based on your five and six, I don't even know if I want to know the rest of your list. Who do you got number four here, Steven?
I got Kalen DeBoer. I'm waiting for my microphone to get cut off here. The rage builds for Mike here. This is really about his success at different stops. And I'm trying to give him a little bit of a grace period for replacing Nick Saban. Not too much, because the bar is set high at Alabama. They had so much talent. They should have made the playoff and didn't. I don't love the inconsistency last season, but he's won. He's Sioux Falls, Fresno, took Washington to the national championship game. 9-4 isn't bad. It's also not up to the standard. So I'm going to give him some credit for the longevity and winning at different levels. But if I was just based upon last season, I would have him behind Kiffin and Heupel.
Yeah. Okay. So, sorry. Who's your top? That's where I got Heupel. I got Heupel 4. Like, you're way off. Way off again. I've kind of made my peace with you, Steven. We're about to end this friendship. But again, what Heupel's done, getting to the playoff, we got to remember, Tennessee was, they were like laughing stock of college football. And I was along for the ride for a better part of, up and down. The joke was, they were basically the Texas joke before Texas. You know, we're back and they're never back. They were the king of offseason hype. Never, ever, ever, ever delivered on it. But now that is completely different under Josh Heupel. And I see there were somebody in the comments saying, well, hell, he's supposed to be an offensive wizard. Well, I think that's a mark of a good coach, playing your defense, playing, being, God forbid you have an elite rushing attack. I mean, that's what you want. That's what the Philadelphia Eagles have. They just won the damn Super Bowl. You don't got to be Kansas City throwing it all over the yard or whatever, but you play to the strengths of your team. If your identity is throwing it all over the yard and you have a great defense and you have a great running back and you're throwing it all the time, you're a damn fool. So I think Heupel's adjustments have been fantastic. I do think he's got to make better adjustments to make the offense more explosive, get back to that. And the biggest thing I'd have against him is he doesn't seem to go outside of his who he knows or comfortable or his coaching tree, whatever you want to say. He promotes from within on offense. And I think that may, you may need to bring in some fresh ideas, but that's a small thing. A team that just waited the college football playoff. If that's my biggest critique of you, I think you're doing one heck of a job.
I think it's fair to wonder, like, what is the next step for Josh Heupel? Can he get Tennessee from being a team that just makes it to actually winning games, making a path to get to the semifinals and potentially to the national championship? But I also go back to something that you said about the defense and the rushing attack. Like, to me, that's a sign of a good coach. If your game plan is like, we've got to throw it, we've got Hendon Hooker, we're going to go to the next quarterback and just keep going, they could be stubborn and end up being a 6-6 team. But I think that's also speaking to the ability to build a well-rounded program, build a team that's good on defense. That was a question when he was hired from UCF, was what kind of defense and also what kind of personnel through recruiting could they get? I think the results are pretty solid so far, building a run game under Dylan Sampson. So I think you have to adapt and evolve. And I would give Heupel a ton of credit in that area, because some coaches could be too stubborn and it can cost you. In this case, they found ways to win different ways, which I think speaks to, in this year, they're losing a lot, but also think you have to trust Heupel and the staff that whatever their strengths are, they will lean on them and be able to make another run at the playoff.
Mm-hmm. All right. So who do you got top three, Steven? Number three.
I've got Brian Kelly.
I know where some of that NIL money's going. It's going right to Steven's pocket based on these rankings. Right.
2025 is going to be a super important year for Brian Kelly. And I give him a ton of credit for the resume, the longevity, 313 all-time victories at different levels. But yes, I want to see Brian Kelly sort of meet the expectations that he set for himself when he came to the SEC. He came to the SEC because he wanted to be in the conference. He wanted to win a national championship. You've got the resources, the coaching staff, the roster the playoff should be the very bare minimum expectation for LSU this year.
Yeah, they're saying Lass and the Assassin, he's on that cornbread right now.
I thought that did you have Kelly, DeBoer, Kiffin, and Heupel somewhat same tier, or am I just crazy again?
You're crazy. I put DeBoer and Kelly in their own tier because I could argue DeBoer in front of Kelly, but I gave the edge to the guy that's actually won in the SEC. Very similar, you know, lofty records in other conferences coming in here, going to win a national championship, yada, yada. You know, that was DeBoer's thing. I'm going to come where I can win a national championship. You know, that's Brian Kelly, same thing. And it seems like LSU is far from it. So, yeah, I have Heupel and two other guys in a tier. And I got DeBoer and Kelly on the outside looking in on that one.
How hard is it for you to separate what happened last season from the entire body of work?
Yeah, I mean, certainly for me, because I'm a very reactionary person, Steven, but I think that is that's a fair question, but and I kind of lean towards a little bit who's hotter, you know what I mean, who's making strides, so to speak, whereas I don't think it's going to happen because Brian Kelly's got a major contract, and I think they got to essentially pay the whole thing if they fire him. But I think we live in a world, Steve, where Brian Kelly gets fired next year, perhaps. Like, I'll throw up our schedule here. If they go like 7-5, which again, that seems ludicrous, but they open at Clemson, so there's a loss. They can't win in the opener. Florida, well, you know, if they continue their hot streak, that could be another loss. At Ole Miss, they lost last time I went down there. South Carolina could be out for blood. At Alabama, I mean, there is a world where 7-5 happens, and if it does, I think he's getting fired.
Mike, if LSU goes 7-5, there should be a coaching change next year, because LSU has the roster to make the playoff. The schedule is difficult, yes, but by year 4 under Brian Kelly, you should be getting closer to the SEC championship, not further away. So 7-5 would be a pretty massive step back. And by that point, I think there would absolutely be a different coach.
Right. So, but you should have put him lower. You should have put him lower. Yeah.
I guess I'm giving him too much credit probably for his wins at Central Michigan, Cincy, Notre Dame, and Grand Valley State, I guess.
You just don't want him yelling at you, which I understand. I've got number 3. I've got Sark. And again, I get it. Red hot. He's doing a hell of a job. I think he's the best play caller in college football, but that's not what we're ranking here. We're ranking head coaches. And with the talent he has, with the coaching staff he has, which he's all responsible for, I get it, but this is probably too low for most. But give me Sarkisian number 3. I still don't I mean, all the things are true about the damn schedule and it being light. You know what I mean? Like nearly every key game, he's a key game. You know, Michigan and A&M were his big wins outside of the obvious playoff ones. I could be wrong here, but I'm confident putting Sarkisian in the top 3. I'm not as confident putting him number 3. Maybe he deserves a little bit more respect, but I'm putting him number 3.
Mike, you are not going to be allowed in the state of Texas anytime soon. Just the selling of A&M stock, ranking Sark number 3. I can't wait. I've been waiting all podcasts to tell you you're wrong. I got Sarkisian at 2. He's the second best coach in the SEC. I didn't think this was actually that close. I love the program development under Sark. I mean, 5 wins to 8 to 25 in the last 2 years. You mentioned it, one of the best play callers in college football, if not the best. Also, a couple plays away from back-to-back appearances in the national championships. I know we could do the what-if game, but they've been close. And I love the way they have built this program. Line of scrimmage, defense. I think he understands what it takes to win in the SEC. So I've got Sark at 2, and I feel pretty good about that.
Yeah, I think he's horribly overrated. Give him number three. My number two is Lane Kiffin. I think Kiffin's doing a better job at a tougher spot with not as much talent, and he's winning games. You know, obviously he's not made the playoff yet, but would Sarkisian have made the playoff at Ole Miss? Hell, I don't think so. If Kiffin was at Texas, I think they would have already won a national championship. You know, especially 2 years ago with the roster they had, I think they would have done it. But again, I'm splitting hairs here. I think they're about cut from the same cloth. Excellent play callers, and they both hired fabulously on the defensive side of the football. So we got some complete rosters here. Give me Kiffin number two, very 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 slight edge over Sarkisian, and I don't know. I know you had Kiffin what, six? So you probably think this is blasphemous.
I was going to say from Lane Wiffen to being the second best coach of the year, a second best coach in the SEC is quite the turnaround. I did not expect you to have him second. I had him fifth, but I think, you know, top 10 in the country seems about right for Lane Kiffin as a coach. So I don't necessarily disagree with having him three or four. I just feel better about Sark at two.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you this. And I'm kind of setting you up for maybe why you're right and I'm wrong, but how many coaches now in the country have a national championship? Is it back to two or Dabo? So three, was it three coaches?
Yeah.
Who would be, if you had to bet your mortgage, which please don't do this, but if you had to bet your mortgage on the next coach to win a national championship, that would be his first national championship, I think the smart money is on Sarkisian. Would you agree with that?
Yes, I would agree with that. I think Sark is number one, with a bit of a gap to the guys in the Big Ten, Lanning, James Franklin, and also throw Marcus Freeman in there too.
Marcus Freeman.
And Brian Kelly.
Yeah, I was about to say, what about his boss, Brian Kelly? Yeah. Come on.
So Kalen DeBoer too?
Yeah, Kalen. I'm not ready to go there. All right, so number one is a easy one, right?
It is, Mike. It's Kirby Smart. This 1-16 were the easiest coaches to rank. I don't think there's any debate. Kirby Smart is the best coach in the SEC. He is also the best coach in college football. This is the program to beat since 2017. They have finished in the top seven every year. Three SEC titles, two national championships, also only two losses in SEC regular season play over the last 4 years. That is quite impressive.
Now, let me ask you this. Another you can only take SEC coaches, Kirby Smart or the field. And again, we're just doing SEC to next win a national championship. Would you take Kirby or would you take the SEC field?
Man, that is a good question. I might go the field just because I would get more shots at it, if you will.
Right.
Because you would get Sark, Kelly, DeBoer, Kiffin, Heupel, and maybe if Brian Kelly doesn't work out, Lane Kiffin goes to LSU or some kind of crazy strategy like that. So you're playing
the long game. I get it. But right. I think I would go Kirby Smart. I think not winning 2 years in a row. Who knows? Who knows how long this window will be open? And it should be open the whole time he's there. But who knows how long that'll be again. So I think Georgia remains as committed as ever to winning national championships. And I think they're going to be right in the thick of it next year.
I do too. And I think there's kind of an interesting setup for next season. There is, I think, the motivation certainly to get back to the SEC championship, win it again in the national championship after the last 2 years, the way things have played out in the playoff, missing it and then losing to Notre Dame. But there's also a significant amount of roster turnover. And I've already started to see this, that Georgia enters 2025 with more questions than usual. And that's probably true. But also when I look at that roster and I see all those guys that were 4 and 5 stars from a few years ago and last season and this season, I'm going, yeah, they're just going to reload. They're going to be fine. So I don't doubt Georgia one bit. I think this could be a revenge tour type situation for Georgia.
Yeah. All right. So we said we're going to do coordinators too. We don't have to spend as much time on it, but thoughts on the top, let's do defense to start the way. Who would be your top 5 defensive coordinators in the SEC?
At number one, I'm going to go Brent Venables, taking over the play calling duties now at Oklahoma. At 2, I've got Pete Kwiatkowski from Texas. I did consider him at 1. I think those two are pretty close. I've got Glenn Schumann at 3, Pete Golding at 4, and Clark Lee at 5. Blake Baker, Tim Banks, Clayton White, all in the discussion as well. Am I crazy?
Well, I mean, it's wild because Steven and I don't share our list before we do these. I've got almost verbatim the same. Venables, Coach K, I got Golding number 3. I got Schumann 4. And it was funny because Steven's like, right before we went on air, he's like, do you see how much you're paying this guy? What a joke. I got DJ Durkin at number 5. I feel bad, but yeah. I think Clark Lee, I kind of forgot about him being a defensive play caller again, but I would probably give that edge to Clark Lee, Clayton White, maybe even. But I'm kind of tore up. Blake Baker, I like what he did at Missouri, and I liked what they did a little bit over at the start of the midway mark of the season at LSU. So I would certainly consider Blake Baker as for that spot as well.
Did you consider Tim Banks at all? I thought he was close in that tier.
Yeah, that's true. I think he's just outside. I really do. I think it was, but he's on the cutting edge right there.
Yeah, I felt like there was like 5 defensive coordinators or so that I could have put at number 5. I felt pretty good about the top 4. Venables, Coach K, Schumann, Golding, kind of whatever order you want to put them in. I felt like those were pretty clear the top 4 coordinators, though. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I certainly think. I think that's fair to say. And there's a lot of good coaches out there in the SEC right now. Another one, Travis Williams. He should be considered as well. But no, I would not put him in the top 5 certainly right now.
Think Kane Womack could coach his way into this discussion too with the defense that Alabama has coming back next year. It's set up to be one of the better groups in the country, so he could easily jump on this radar next season.
Now, how about offensive coordinators? And this is tricky because there's a lot of head coaches that get tied in, and some of them call the plays, and then sometimes they say they're not calling the plays. So this is a little tricky. So where would you go with the offensive coordinator rankings?
I got Sarkisian at 1. I've got Bobby Petrino at 2. Josh Heupel at 3. Mike Bobo 4. Ryan Grubb at 5. I did not rank Lane Kiffin or Charlie Weiss Jr. just simply because I've heard mixed things on the play calling, so I just left them off. If Lane Kiffin is the solo play caller, he is in my top 5, though.
Yeah, so I went Sark, Kiffin, Heupel, Bobby Petrino, and here, how about this wild card? I think you left him out here. Oh, I think you overlooked him. Jeff Lebby, number 5, is where I went right there.
How about Kirby Moore? I think he deserves some consideration, at least, for this top 5.
I would say coming into last season, I would agree with you, but and not to say he's all to blame or anything, but just the way Missouri played on offense for 2/3 of the season last year, I didn't quite consider him. I think he's a very, very, very good offensive coordinator. We're about to find out how good he really is, I think, this year, though.
Yeah, absolutely. New starting quarterback, no Luther Burden, rebuilt offensive line. He's definitely going to earn his salary this season. I did think Colin Klein, Ben Arbuckle were the two I kind of had in the space of they feel like they could really move up this list with good seasons next year. A lot of expectations, a lot of potential, but also a lot of questions for both going into 2025.
No Bush Tandon, huh?
Nope. No, should have asked you if you had Coleman Hutzler.
And I didn't even think about it, but we had Clark Brooks, SEC StatCat, but you know, he made an excellent point. Bush Hamden had Talon Green and the Boise running back that was spectacular, and still was not as effective as he should have been. You know what?
Yeah, that's why I was surprised when he was hired at Kentucky. It felt like their offense at Boise was just okay. And, I mean, they upgraded this year when they had Dirk Cutter, the former NFL coach and college coach. He's bounced around a million ways. But I think fair to say Bush Hamden, Coleman Hutzler, the two coordinators maybe with the hottest seats next season.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, without it. I mean, those two, I'm surprised they were even brought back. So scorching hot seats for each of them. Man, all right. So we went over an hour and 20 minutes. Anything else you want to close out on, Steven?
Mike, I think the takeaway for me in doing these coaching rankings is there's a lot of intrigue for 2025. And when you start to do these, because like you see, like Kalen DeBoer, it's a critical season. How does Lane Kiffin reload? Brian Kelly, kind of an important year. It feels very wide open in this conference, like after the top, you know, 4 to 5. And so it's going to be interesting to see how what happens in 2025 and the job status. It feels it's not one of the SEC's deeper groups of coaches, but there's also a lot of scenarios where I think a lot of these guys could turn things around, or our perception changes a lot next season after seeing what happens.
Yeah, and it's not just you know, a couple spots either. I mean, I think this is a real opportunity, believe it or not. You talked about all the questions with Georgia. I don't know how many questions you truly have for Texas, but I mean, I could see a world where the three teams that made the SEC or made the playoff out of the SEC, I don't think it's like unbelievable that all of them missed the playoff this year. What if an LSU emerges? What if Ole Miss can keep it together, take that next step? What if Missouri catches fire? Alabama, you know, so many others that what if South Carolina, what if Sellers, what if EJ Lagway continues to take steps forward? I mean, there are contenders around, and it being kind of up in the air, schedules being unbalanced, I think that really creates a window for a lot of these teams that people, who in the hell had Indiana making the playoff? Like, you know what I mean? Yet they just did it. Who had SMU in the playoff? I know it's not perfect comparison because they're in weak conferences, but this format, it makes it to where a lot of these other teams that you don't necessarily right now are pegging as like a playoff team, you could be there in the end.
Somebody is going to be a wild card playoff team this 2025 season. The question is going to be who. This format opens it up quite a bit for somebody, whether that is a Missouri with a favorable schedule. Perhaps it is South Carolina making the jump with the Norris Sellers. If I told you 3.5 was the over-under on SEC teams making the playoff, I know it's early, super early, but would you take the over or would you take the underside of that?
I think I'd take the over. I think I would. I think Sankey's going to – he may not have control over it next year, but 2026 and beyond, he will have control over how many, you know, there must be at least X amount of SEC teams making it. So, yeah, I think it was a bad look, quite frankly, that Big Ten got 4 and SEC only got 3. So, you know, I think changes will be made, and I think SEC will get more than 3.
I would take 4. I think 4 get there. I think my way too early guess is Georgia and Texas and some combination of LSU, Alabama, Tennessee, South Carolina. Throw one of the other teams in there. Somebody gets in there of those two. I think it'll be not necessarily the revenge of the SEC, but I think it'll be a much better year.
I like that. The revenge of the SEC. It's already started in basketball. It's going to go over to baseball. It's going to come full circle in football next year. So, Stephen, hey, appreciate you. As always, coming by and dropping all this knowledge. Before you go, can you tell the cousins how to follow you and how to find your work?
Absolutely. You can check out all my work over at AthlonSports.com. Our NFL draft magazine should be hitting newsstands soon. We are already hard at work on the college football magazine. You can follow me over on Twitter at AthlonSteven and StephenLCFB over on Instagram and Facebook.
All right, Stephen, we appreciate you. We appreciate each and every one of you for hanging out. We'll catch you on the next one.
Hey, buddy. This beer's for you, Mike, and Cousin Shane. That SEC podcast loves the pirate, and the pirate loves that SEC podcast. Hail State.